The Sadducees were a small but very influential group within Jewish society. And unlike the majority of the Jewish people, the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. They believed that once someone died, that that was the end for them. And so when they question Jesus in today's gospel, they're not asking a sincere question about, you know, what happens after death. They're trying to make Jesus and anyone who believes in the resurrection look foolish with an argument of absurdity. And so they give this example of a woman who married seven different brothers, and then after they all died, whose wife is she going to be in the resurrection? So they're trying to make belief in the resurrection look foolish. And when Jesus answers them, he basically reveals to them that they have no idea what they're talking about. You know, that they don't understand that the resurrection is going to be different than what life is like in this world. But that does raise the question, what happens after death? Because there's a lot of different ideas circulating within our society, and many of them are not very accurate. But immediately after death, each one of us will stand before Christ for our particular judgment. And we'll get a glimpse of Christ. We won't see him as fully as the saints in heaven with the beatific vision. But we will realize at that point the depth of love that God has for his children. And that experience of God's love will be so powerful that it would be beyond any earthly experience of love, any earthly friendship, or the love that that a husband and a wife have for each other, or parents for their children. We would recognize a love that is far deeper than anything like that. And that's what Jesus is pointing to in this gospel when he says they are the children of God, that they will recognize the relationship that our Heavenly Father desires to have with us. You know, we'll experience a love that is so pure and so total that no one who is unclean would dare to enter into his presence. And so when the souls are in that position, standing before God, those who are in a state of grace and who have been perfected, you know, those who have died as saints, will enter into the presence of God and enter into the glory of heaven and experience untold joys for all eternity. Souls that are in a state of unrepentant mortal sin at that moment will flee from the presence of God, because when they see his goodness and the perfect love that he has, they'll turn away from that and they'll flee into the darkness. You know, the people who are in a state of grace, but who have not yet been perfected, will go to purgatory where they will be purified for a period of time. And when we look at what purgatory is, the least pain in purgatory is greater than the most intense pain that we could possibly experience in this life. You know, that's why when we hear the first reading today about these seven brothers, you know, they are, if you read the whole chapter, the lectionary cuts out some of the more graphic parts. But if you read that whole chapter, these seven brothers were brutally tortured and they were executed one by one, and they refused to even eat one bite of pork in violation of God's laws. You know, they wouldn't eat a single bite of pork. And why were they willing to undergo such excruciating torment? Well, they said, because they believed in the resurrection. And so they recognized that being pure and following God's laws perfectly is so important that it is worth suffering any torture that this world can hand out to us to enter into the next life without sin. And so that passage conveys to us the seriousness of the moral life. And so why are the pains of purgatory so much greater than the pains of this world? Well, in part, it's because the souls that are in purgatory have experienced a taste of God's love for them. And they long to be in his presence with such intensity that it's painful for them not to be in his presence. And so they desire to be purified because they wouldn't dare enter into the presence of God with anything unclean or impure. And so their intense longing to be in God's presence actually creates a lot of the pain in purgatory that they experience. But they're purified in God's love, in the fire of his love, so that one day they can enter into the presence of God when perfected. And so what is it that needs to be purified in purgatory? Well, any venial sins that we've committed and haven't repented of, or any vices that we have, those all need to be atoned for. And also the penance that we should have done for the sins that we've committed. And so if we commit a mortal sin and we go to confession, confession removes the eternal punishment of that sin. But we're still supposed to do penance for that. That's one of the reasons why we receive a penance in confession. And so when we do commit sin, even though those sins are forgiven, we still need to fast. We still need to give alms. We still need to pray. We still need to have a deep contrition for our sin in order to atone for what we call temporal punishment. And often, people don't do the minimum that God expects of them in order to atone for the temporal punishment of sin. Often, people either don't realize that they should be doing those things, or they don't take the effects of sin seriously enough. Oftentimes, we don't realize the seriousness of the effects of sin. And so the time that people spend in purgatory depends on the number of venial sins and also how much temporal punishment they still have to do. When we look at purgatory, no one who's in purgatory would ever want to come back to this world. And the reason for that is the souls in purgatory know that they will reach heaven. Sooner or later, they know that they will enter the glory of heaven. And so they would never dare risk their salvation. You know, our salvation is always at risk. You know, we don't know if we're going to attain the glory of heaven or not. But one advantageous position we're in is that right now we can attain merit. What does that mean? Well, we can freely choose to give alms. We can freely choose to do penance. We can freely choose to go to Eucharistic adoration or go to confession. The souls in purgatory can't do that. They've received their sentence, and they need to do their time. There's no opportunity for them to voluntarily obtain merit. We can do that. And so it's important for us to recognize that we can grow in holiness now, and the importance of us taking advantage of the time that we have, because the souls in the next life can't do that. And it's also important for us to pray for the souls in purgatory, because they're helpless to help themselves. But we can help them with our prayers. We can voluntarily pray for them and gain indulgences for them and fast for them. And what's interesting is we can actually deepen our relationship with the souls in purgatory, because they're suffering excruciating pain. And so if we can assist them and provide them relief in what they're doing, they're going to be grateful. And we can actually deepen our friendship beyond the friendship that we've established in this life with the souls in purgatory by praying for them and by assisting them in their time of need. And so as we reflect upon these readings today about the resurrection, it should convey to us the importance of being in a state of grace and of living great holiness and using this time that we have where we can obtain merit, using that time well. And the importance of praying for the souls in purgatory and deepening our relationship and our friendship with them by doing acts of mercy for them.